So how does one make one's way into this extraordinary text from John? It's not unique, but it's certainly the most vivid metaphor that the Johannine writers use to talk about our relationship with Jesus. In reading about this, a couple of quotations came to me. One from a really good friend of mine, a very bright woman, married, who described marriage in this way. Marriage is allowing somebody to enter into your solitude. I was struck by that description because it seems marriage is this total intimacy, physical, psychological. But it's not, of course. It's not, of course. But what she was getting at, I think, is something absolutely crucial to us. We human beings are, it seems, almost by nature, solipsistic, radically individualistic. We have this little machinery in this little calcium box on our shoulders, this little binocular vision whereby we look out like a periscope in a submarine looking at the world. And it seemed clearly that we are essentially alone. We are essentially solitary. And I think that's, the older you get and the more you're battered by life and beaten around by people that maybe you trusted, the attempt to further recede into that little safe calcium box becomes even more intense. So what is being proposed here is something radically different. John's gospel has been called the mystical gospel. What's mysticism? Well, depends on whom you read. But certainly it means there's a sense of oneself that is not accountable by normal calculation. And this business of the little calcium box and the binocular vision is a good example of that. What the Johannine writer is saying is that our solitude is in a very real sense artificial. And I think we're aware of that. I mean, there are very few things as terrifying as solitude in human life. I mean, there's a long article in the New York Review of Books where an expert was saying that solitary confinement is a worse form of torture than waterboarding and electrical shocks and tearing out fingernails and all this other stuff. If you simply leave people alone, totally by themselves, it induces the terrors of hell. So we are paradoxical creatures. Experientially, we seem to be solitary. And yet we can't endure that. We can't survive with that. And so what the Johannine writer is proposing is a radical redefinition of who I am. The other quotation that came to me during the week, which is not maybe as apt as my friend Judy's, is something from Wuthering Heights, of all places, where Kathy says, "I am Heathcliff." I'm sure there's some kind of large dollop of neurasthenia in her self-proclamation. But I know at least what she's after. That my life, existentially, is unthinkable. Who I am is inconceivable, apart from my connection with this other person. Now, where the Bronte girl missed it is that no other human being can do that. But that's exactly what God is about. In the wonderful phrase of Augustine, God is more intimate to me than I am to myself. God is present, it is I who am absent. And so what the Johannine writer is saying is simply that to be a follower of Jesus is to let this man absolutely into your life. his way of looking at things, his way of hearing things, his way of responding to things. That's what has been called Christ mysticism. And it's not just peculiar to John, but Paul says something equally outrageous. I live, no, now, not I, but Christ lives in me. Again, the sense of who I am, the continuous realization that I am not alone, that I want this man to be central to my existence, to be absolutely the pole toward which I identify myself, I understand myself. It's an astonishing vision. But that's what we're called to. Heaven has been described in the book of Revelation as when God will be all in all. Exactly the same thing, to go consciously into my life with that understanding, with that sense of who I am. However obscure the presence of Jesus is, however obscure the presence of God is in my life, that's what we're called to be. In a way, that's a terrifying process because we feel we're being expropriated. But, and we are by other people. That's where, again, Kathy's remark fails, because the other human being is quite ready to expropriate us, intentionally or unintentionally. But God, simply by reason of being God, does not expropriate us, but makes us who we are, calls us to be who we are. And that's why the human face of Jesus is central. That's why we call ourselves Christian. Please note, several important consequences follow from this. This is the heart of religion. Not obedience, not laws, not procedures, not liturgy. This kind of self-awareness is what we're called to. And everything else that we call religious has to be judged in terms of this central reality. It must be. Otherwise, we're falsifying it. And God knows the history of the church is full of such falsifications, and we continue to have them. But then the other major implication of this is one of profound frustration, I think. A pervasive failure. I don't do it. I don't hear other people the way Jesus heard them. I don't see other people the way Jesus saw them. I don't respond to other people the way Jesus responded. I don't. I simply don't. And that's where this gorgeous line from First Letter of John is so important. Again, God. Whenever our heart condemn us, God is greater than our hearts. So that's the sort of preliminary understanding I think we have. The sense of failure, of deficiency, of inadequacy. Jesus is not the vine of whom I am a branch. But I want to be. And being aware of who Jesus is and being aware of who I am, then necessarily I'm going to be cast into this terrible state of self-doubt or self-condemnation. Necessarily, if I'm honest. And this, of course, is a big problem with the church today. We are not honest. Let's face it, we are not honest. And we live in a world where there's not a great deal of honesty either, for that matter. But God is greater than our hearts. God is greater than our hearts. And that's where we're called to rest.